Curve. I am Wicked Good, and I am talking to you about Hearthstone as I am driving home from work. It is Tuesday, June 12th, 2018. It's still 2018. And I had Legend. It's way early. It's way, way early. I'm as surprised as you are, honestly. Like, I mean, I've been used to... I mean, granted, I guess we haven't really had a full month since maybe March was, since the ladder changes. And even then, everyone was kind of trying to figure everything out. So this is the first month that, you know, because we had an expansion drop in April, and then we had a, and then we had a nerf patch in May. So we had, like, we've had two rolling months of two metas. So that's kind of weird as far as trying to figure out, like, what to bring. So I thought it was going to happen with Recruit Hunter. I was actually on fire with Recruit Hunter for, like, a couple of days. And I even posted a list on Twitter before I hit Legend, which is not something that I typically do. But I felt like the list was working well enough for me that, and I'd had people asking, like, what Recruit Hunter you... Because, I mean, Recruit Hunter's the new hotness, right? So, like, you know, and after having hit Legend with it last month, first of all, I felt like I knew the deck pretty well. And also, I, you know, I've been getting people asking me what version I was running. So I put that up on Twitter, and after that, I was doing okay with it, but I felt like I was kind of going 50-50 because a lot of it was, all of a sudden, the meta corrected. And this is something that you kind of need to keep your eye on when you're climbing, especially when the meta is as unstable as this is that if you're not paying attention, you can keep running the same deck into bad matchups and just, like, keep pressing the... This is why I say, like, the general advice is keep pressing the button until you turn orange, but you do need to kind of reevaluate every so often. Because sometimes, if you're not paying attention, the meta can change on you. And it's really tough to know if the meta is actually changing on you, or if it's, like, a blip and a whole bunch of people are trying something all at once because some streamer posted some list online. But I felt like, all of a sudden, I was seeing, like, on Saturday, like, Friday into Saturday, I was seeing, like, a lot of Odd Rogue and a lot of Paladin. And those two matchups are... They're not unwinnable matchups, but they're not great for the Recruit Hunter because you just can't deal with a wide board very well. Like, you're generally looking to punish the slower decks. It's almost like... I don't want to say it's quite like Quest Rogue because it's not... First of all, it's certainly not as complicated. And it also... It's not... like an auto loss against faster decks, but it's also very much tuned to punish slower decks. Like, you just get up ahead of them and you create a series of threats on the board that they really can't clear easily, and then you just beat them. And Paladin and Rogue don't care, they just keep hitting you in the face. And if you're having to react instead of setting up your board, then you really can't get very far. So I felt that I was, like, at rank 1, 4 stars. No, not 4 stars, like 2 stars at one point with the Recruit Hunter. And then I just started slowly falling. And I got frustrated. I tried Quest Warrior for some stupid reason and lost a couple more stars. And went back to the Hunter, and I was losing more. And I decided, okay, you know what? I need to stop. First of all, I need to stop because I'm tilted. Like, that was an obvious thing. Because just losing that many stars when you're that close is never a great feeling. And I felt like I needed to reevaluate. Like, if the meta really was, like, that heavily unfavored, then I needed to rethink my strategy. Now, that said, I had given the same list to Dragon Rider in her stream on Saturday, and with the caveat that I was struggling with it now, but I was doing very well with it before. And she did end up hitting Legend with it in, like, a day. So it could be that if I stuck with it, that I might have been able to get there, but I just felt like I wasn't making progress. And I felt like if it wasn't working, I needed to make a change. So I started looking around, and I found an Even Shaman list on HS Replay. I'll talk about the list in more detail, you know, after this, but, you know, it's Legend story time, right? So we gotta have our legend story time. So I switched to the deck, and I felt like I was climbing like really fast. Like I went from three. Like we had, I picked it up on Sunday. We'd had a lacrosse game for one of my younger daughters, and we got home at like 2:30 or something like that. And I was playing until we left for dinner, like 2 hours later. And I'd gone from rank three up to like rank one, 3 stars, like in 2 hours. It was bananas. And it was just stomping everything because a lot of it was, there was a lot of Hunter. There were a lot of slower decks. And even Shaman was one of the decks that I didn't run up against very much. But when I did run up against it as the Hunter, I got smoked. So I figured that was good against the Hunter, and it was also good against a lot of the faster decks, with the bonus of my knowing from having played it before the nerfs that it generally wrecks Paladin too. And Paladin was one of the things I was seeing more of, because you can get on board and your things generally trade 2 for 1 and heal themselves sometimes, and they can't keep up, and you can build a board better than they can. So I climbed up to 1.3 and I decided, I got home and I'm like, okay, well, I'm streaming anyway because it's Sunday night. So I got on stream, and you can watch this on my stream, by the way. I lost the first two games. One of them was I think I was just not playing well. And the second one was against Quest Warrior, which is a terrible matchup. And then after that, I didn't drop a game. And these games were not easy. I assure you, there was a Q block that had me dead to rights, and then I was able to just kind of hold on and find my way out of it. Both of my last two games to get to Legend were against people who were in top 250 Legend. One of them was Lucas, who has a golden card back. I believe he was in summer playoffs. I'm not sure if it was this year or last year. Who was playing a Shudderwalk Shaman. And I made a decision early in that game that I needed to coin Hagatha, because I was just going to need all of that value that I could get. And he was holding me off. I got him down to like between 10 and 15. He healing rained for full value twice. And I was able to pull a Bloodlust off of a Hagatha. And I just decided at one point, like, I'm not getting any more value out of this Bloodlust than I'm getting right now. And it's not going to be lethal, but I just need to do damage, because I only have a certain amount of time before the Life Drinker train starts. And if I can at least get in before Shudderwalk, even if he drops it, I might have one turn to open myself up a window. So I get him down to 12 with, and he drops Shudderwalk. But the Shudderwalk, he hadn't gotten a chance to find either Grumble or Zola. So it just created two copies. And because of the Hagatha, they were both 6/3s. So I was able to use one of the avalanches in my hand, followed by a fire elemental, to clear those, and I didn't have to worry about Shudderwalk anymore. And then the fire Hagatha from this fire elemental gave me Wind Fury. So he set up something the next turn, but none of them were taunts, and I was able to Wind Fury the fire elemental for lethal the following turn. I was shocked. I was convinced I was going to lose that game. And then finally, my final boss was someone who was like ranked 250 Legend, who was playing Odd Paladin, and that's a much easier matchup. I mean, it was still a difficult game, but I was able to get there on stream. I went in at around 750 Legend, which I think is the highest I've ever been. And then I played against Hot Form, followed by, who is a 2015 HCT finalist, followed by Raze, who I believe just won the last Copa America, and I beat them both. And I am still in shock, and I haven't gone back into Standard since, because I'm afraid to try anymore. I'm kind of like George Costanza in that one episode, like, good night, everybody. But the deck's really good. Deck's really, really good. It needs the right meta, but this meta where everything's kind of slower, and then you can kind of get in over top of them, it's really good. And we'll talk about that in a second too. But so I was really happy to get there, and I'm probably going to be focusing more on Wild the rest of the month. I may go into Standard a little bit, but I really would love to explore the new Wild meta now that Naga Sea Witch is gone. I am at like rank 3 because I played Odd Paladin until it stopped working. So I'm trying some things there, and we'll kind of see how that goes. All right, so let's talk about Even Shaman and you know, why the deck worked so well for me, and then when you should think about playing it and when you shouldn't. So let's go through the deck list really quick, and I want to talk about how to play the deck, because it's really not 100% intuitive the first time that you're picking it up, and it kind of does take a little bit of practice to understand what the deck can do and how you should be playing it optimally. So let's go through the deck list first. You have your buff package is right at the top of the list. With Direwolf, 2 Direwolf Alpha, 2 Earthen Might, and 2 Flame Tongue Totem. So, a lot of your early turns with this deck are going to be hero powers. So, you're going to be playing 0-2 Totems or maybe a 1-1 Totem. And this is probably the one deck where a 1-1 Totem is actually not the worst thing in the world. You don't actually mind Searing Totem all that much in this deck. And the reason is that you're putting bodies on the board early that your other cards turn into threats. And that's kind of the idea of the early part of the deck. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to hero power every turn, except for maybe like turn 2 and turn 4. But past that, you're generally trying to hero power almost every turn. You're trying to put these pretty much worthless totems on the board. And then you're trying to get value out of them. So positioning in this deck is extremely important. I'll go through that in a minute. But anyway, so a lot of those cards are there to buff your early game and get value out of your early game. You have 2 Knife Jugglers because, again, you're putting a lot of bodies on board. You have 2 Mark Spark Eels because you're playing Even Shaman in a 2-3 that does 2 damage to a minion or actually can go face is actually really valuable. You have 2 Primal Fin Totems, again, in the interest of getting a lot of things on board. A 0-3 that also can put 1-1 Totems, Murlocs on the board, rather, is really valuable, especially when you have all those cards to buff them. So you're trying to build up a board that's scary and make your opponent waste removal on low-value minions. So they may have to clear a board that has like a Flame Tongue or a Direwolf on it, but the rest of it may just be totems. And if they have to waste like a Duskbreaker or some other like premium board clear on a bunch of free hero powers, then you're coming up way ahead because you have more cards in hand that you can now use to get the board back and get more value. You've got 1 Vicious Scalehide, mainly because you want the Lifesteal to trigger on the Corpse Taker. That is also on the list. It's a rush lifesteal that's valuable when you can buff it sometimes. But really the value in it is just that you run Corpse Takers in the list, and that happens to be your one activator for Corpse Taker. Because Corpse Taker will pull Lifesteal, Taunt, Wind Fury, Divine Shield from other minions in the deck. So if you have a Scalehide in your deck, then your Corpse Takers get Wind Fury. I feel like it might be the most cuttable. Like, this might be the 30th card in the list, just because I don't feel like the Lifesteal was super relevant a lot of the time, but, you know, it does sometimes come in handy, and it makes the Corpse Takers a little bit more of a target. So you do have 2 Corpse Takers, again, because you're running things with Divine Shield and Taunt and Wind Fury and Lifesteal, so you may as well run the Corpse Takers, and they become a real big threat when you can drop them on curve. Like, a 3-3 for 4 with all those keywords attached to them pretty much needs to be answered, especially when you're running buffs. You can throw an Earthen Might onto this or a Flame Tongue next to it, and all of a sudden that's 10 damage to face right away. And that's, the Wind Fury in particular becomes very, very scary on the Corpse Taker. You run 1 Cult Master. I didn't like Cult Master originally, and I kind of warmed up to it. Again, you have a lot of minions on board. You have a lot of things that can buff it. You can turn those into card draw when you're starting to run low on resources, especially when you're starting to lose board. You have 2 Hexes because Warlock is a class. You have 2 Serenite Chain Gangs, again, because they're taunts, and also they're probably the best 4-drop taunt in the game. You run two Argent Commanders because they have Divine Shield, and also that's additional burst damage. So that can be 4 damage burst on its own. It can be a removal. It can be like a 6-mana remove a minion, leave a 4-2 behind. Or it could do 4 damage to face. Or you could buff it. you could end up doing 6 damage to face. You could even do like 8 or 9 damage to face with one Argent Commander. So it's really effective to just be able to finish off when you know, when your minions start running into walls. You've got 2 fire elementals, half because they are just, I mean, they're just really good minions. I mean, a 6/5 for 6 that also does 3 damage potentially to face is really good. It also has some synergy with Earth and Might. So it turn 8 fire elemental Earth and Might gets you a 6/5, it does 3 damage, and it draws you another card. It gives you another random elemental. And elementals on the whole are generally pretty decent. You run Gen Grey Mane because this is an even deck, and you kind of have to. But again, a 6-mana 6/5 in this deck is not the worst thing in the world. And sometimes you'll play... One thing that I discovered is you generally want to play Gen if you have Gen in a fire elemental, and you don't really have a target for the fire elemental. You generally want to play Gen first and just get the 6/5 down, and then you can use the fire elemental later to do that damage. You have Alakir the Windlord, half because it's a lot of burst, and again, with all the buffs in play and the Wind Fury, you're starting at 6 damage burst with one Earth and Might that's 10. You know, you can get even higher than that if you have a decent arrangement of Flame Tongues and Dire Wolves. Plus, again, you have Earth and Might synergy, so you can play that and then get another elemental behind it. You can also, it also activates the Wind Fury on Corpse Taker as well as the Divine Shield and the Taunt. So Alakir is replaceable, but if you're planning on laddering seriously with this deck, I would absolutely run it, because I don't know, there might be another minion with Wind Fury that's got an even cost, but I don't know that there is. Typically, these types of lists have run Stormwatcher, I think is the card, the 7-mana 4/8 Wind Fury to get the Wind Fury on the Corpse Taker, but that's not an option in an even deck. You run Hagatha at you know, at the top end, just because you sometimes just need to clear the board if you're losing board in a tempo or an aggro matchup, and also just against control, sometimes you just need that extra value. Like there was the game, that game against Lucas, I dropped Hagatha on 7. I coined it out because I knew that I was going to need some of that additional value in the form of Bloodlust, in the form of Lavaverse and Lightning Storm and Lightning Bolt, even in just like Spirit Echo or Healing Rain just to heal up, like Farsight. Like there's a lot of stuff you can get that's valuable, and it's valuable in a way that sometimes it isn't in like a Shudderwalk Shaman. Like in Shudderwalk Shaman, you're generally playing Hagatha as like a break glass in case of emergency because it messes up your combo. Here you play Hagatha just whenever you're about to lose board, because it just creates so much value and it gives you so much extra oomph to get over the finish line that sometimes you'll just play it early and just get it down. You run the Lich King because it's an 8-drop and it's good. And then you run 2 Sea Giants because you're spamming minions onto the board. A lot of the aggressive decks are also doing the same, and even some of the mid-range and control-y decks are playing things like Serenade Chain Gang. They're playing, if you're playing a Shudderwalk Shaman, they're hero powering. You can get a Sea Giant down very early, and sometimes that's the difference against control in particular. Excuse me. Just getting a whole bunch of minions down and then dropping a Sea Giant and then protecting yourself from AoE. So that's the list. I really like the list. I think there are some lists that are slightly different. There are some that go a little bit heavier into the elemental synergy with Kalamos. I think this is the right balance of both value and tempo, and it proved to be very, very effective on my climb to legend. So in general, this deck is, the reason that I was so successful with it is because it punishes control decks by just going in under them, and particularly Recruit Hunter. So I switched from Recruit Hunter when I felt like it was being targeted. And it was being targeted by tempo decks like Paladin and Odd Rogue. Like Odd Paladin and Odd Rogue. And those are decks that just kind of ramp up early. Not ramp up, that's the wrong word. But they get started early and they build this board that snowballs when a slower deck is just kind of trying to find its footing. And then ends the game before they can really get their power turns going. So even Shaman does the same thing, but it's also really good against those types of decks. Because what Odd Paladin is putting down 1/1s, you're putting down cards that can, when you buff them, can trade 2 for 1. So they're hero powering and putting down 2 1/1s. You have to, by the time, by that turn, it's turn three for you, or with the coin or without, and you can then, you have two minions on board from hero powering or playing a two drop the first two turns, and then you drop a direwolf and a, or a flame tongue totem between them. You trade off both those 1/1s, your minions are still ready to go, and by the way, if one of those was a healing totem, they just healed up from all that damage, and it's though nothing had happened. So, you can, the way I've described this is that it kind of feels like a zoo deck with fish and totems, because a lot of what you're doing in the early game is just establishing board. You're hero powering as often as possible. You're buffing those minions and getting more value out of them. And then you're dropping more threatening minions behind them so that your opponent deals with the first wave and you've just put down something that's scarier. You spend your first three turns putting down, you know, reasonable early drops and then buffing them and trading off. They deal with that first wave and you've just dropped a Corpse Taker, or you've just dropped a Saronite Chain Gang. They deal with that, all of a sudden you have a Fire Elemental coming down, or you're charging off one of their minions that they managed to value trade with the front half of an Argent Commander. So you're constantly keeping board, and you're kind of trading until you don't, a lot like with Zoo. Like, there is a point where you need to turn around and just start going face, but for the very first few turns, especially against another tempo deck, you're just trading and you're trying to keep board. And as long as you can keep board, you know, you're trying to build up towards a big Sea Giant turn, too. And the Sea Giant is really your best defense against AoE. Like, the way that you defeat an AoE-centric deck is you build up a board that's wide enough that they want to AoE, but then you put a large minion on the board alongside so that none of their single card clears will fully clear your board. And then you put them in an uncomfortable position. Either they deal with the big threat and then leave all the little ones, which they know that you can capitalize on. Or they get rid of the little threats, but then they have an 8-8 charging at your face. So that's really your strategy against any sort of the slower decks. And against, I had a really good win rate against Paladin. Rogue is generally, like, I would say it's slightly favored. But, like, against the Recruit Hunter or Shudderwalk Shaman or anything that's not basically going for fatigue as a potential game plan, like something like Quest Priest would be difficult. Quest Warrior is a miserable matchup. Big Spell Mage is a miserable matchup. Those are just designed to clear and clear and clear and clear and then put taunts in your way and never let you through. Those decks are going to be bad news for you. But against, like, most of what we're seeing is control decks in this meta, which is Recruit Hunter and Spell Hunter are not really control decks, but they kind of are. And Spell Hunter is also the same way. Shudderwalk Shaman, this is absolutely good against. Even like a Tempo Mage, you can kind of keep up ahead because you can still put minions on the board and then mostly buff them. Sometimes you run into a bad trap, but I didn't see a lot of Tempo Mage. Typically with your Mulligans, what you're looking for, it depends on whether you have the coin or not. If you have the coin, you're generally looking for at least 1 2-drop and 1 4-drop so that you can go... ideally, you want 2 2-drops and a 4-drop. You want to go hero power, 2-drop, 2-drop hero power, 4-drop, or hero power, 2-drop, coin, 4-drop. And you... What's different about this type deck than, like, a lot of, like, an Evolve Shaman, say, in, like, the last meta, is that you will generally keep any buff cards in your opening hand. And yes, this includes Earth and Might. And one thing that I found is really, like, the important thing about Earth and Might is that you do not need to get the value off the elemental synergy. Like, it's a bonus, but it's not what you need in order to play that card. Like, it is occasionally correct to go to put an Earth and Might on a totem and use that to start trading. I've very often, one thing that I will do is if I feel like an AoE is coming, like a small AoE, like a Duskbreaker or maybe a small Dragon's Fury or something like that, I will put Earth and Might on my Direwolf or my Flame Tongue to make sure that it lives through the turn. And that lets it trade, and then it buffs up my next wave of minions. So that's something that's very powerful. I mean, Flame Tongue, you generally want to wait until you have two minions down, if you can, unless you need to trade something off in a tempo matchup. Like, if your opponent went with a Righteous Protector on one, maybe Righteous Protector isn't the best idea, but, like, let's say they put a Dire Mole down on one, Like, you went turn one hero power, and you got a Searing Totem. They went turn one Diremole, and it's turn two. It's okay to put Flame Tongue down next to the 1-1 and trade off the Diremole and keep the Flame Tongue on board. But in general, what you generally want to do is you want to play a 2-drop, and then you want to play the minion that buffs both to get as much value out of it as you can, because you're trying to maximize your damage. And that's what you're trying to do against any sort of slower matchup. Against any sort of slower deck, you are the aggro deck, and you need to go face as much as possible. So if it's a scary minion, or it's a minion that you need to trade off to protect one of your bigger threats, then you do it. But in the general, what you want to do is you want to direct as much of that damage face as possible while keeping in mind their board clears. Like, you always... It's kind of a delicate dance as far as how much you put down, and sometimes you can't help but play into something. Like... Sometimes you're going to play into a Spreading Plague, or you're going to play into a Volcano or something like that, and it's just going to happen. But you kind of want to think about, do I need to play this, or is this enough pressure to get them to AoE if they have it? And then, you know, kind of toe that line as much as you can, because having reload is really important. And again, I will keep Hagatha in really slow matchups. I think it's okay, because you generally will need that extra value to get yourself over the finish line. And the sooner you can drop Hagatha, the more value you will get out of her. Against a faster matchup, you are just trying to trade as much as possible. Your goal is to outlast them. You can generally out-trade an aggro deck as long as you're being smart about where you're taking your trades, because you will get value trades more often than not, and then force them to give up their minions. And if you can do that enough turns, and eventually you can snowball it to the point where you can start doing face damage and get that chip damage in too, that they're using weapons to start clearing your minions and they're taking more damage, and you're using your chip damage, and then eventually you're directing a sea giant face while taking out their smaller minions with your smaller minions. So it's very much a board deck. If you think of it like Zoo, it will probably help you. It is not going to be good if you're seeing a lot of Big Spell Mage and Quest Warrior. I will warn you of that. You do need to be meta, you know, cognizant of your meta. But I think that this is a very good choice for a meta that has solidified around Recruit Hunter. Now, I will be completely honest and say I have avoided Standard since I hit Legend, because I kind of don't want to give up my top 500 status. I know it's going to decay, but I haven't really brought myself to wanting to play back there again. And I've been trying to ladder in Wild a little bit. But as much as, you know, Recruit Hunter is darling in the meta, this is a pretty good counter to it, and it's good against almost everything except for some of the fringe decks. And those have been mostly chased out of the meta by Recruit Hunter. So that kind of allows the door to open for this. So I would say if you're up for it, you should try this deck. If you are missing some of the legendaries, again, Alakir is probably replaceable. You can do this without Hagatha as well. And even the Lich King, you probably have by now if you're playing this deck. But if you don't, then that's okay too. Just find other... You could play a Primordial Drake. You could play, you know, pretty much just fit things with the right costs in there and you'll be okay. Your win rate won't be as good against some of the slower decks to not have that value at the top end. I mean, you could run a Kalamos in here too if you wanted to. If you didn't have one of those, you could swap in a Kalamos. It's still just a 7-7, which is fine. So, you know, even like a Skulking Geist might be okay. I wouldn't recommend it unless you really are out of other options. But, you know, that might be okay as a 6-drop. There are better 6-drops probably. But I would say give this deck a try, at least to understand how it works, so that if you do run up against it on ladder, you can beat it, or at least you can know what you're up against so that you can play against it a little bit better. Okay, so there's one other thing that I meant to talk about that I forgot about when I recorded the previous segment, and I just want to insert it in here quickly, and that's about positioning. And I mentioned that briefly when I was talking about the list. And it's really important in a deck like this where you have so many buffs that are reliant upon adjacent minions, that you're positioning your minions correctly. And that's really the key to this deck. And we haven't had a deck like this. Maybe one of the Zoo decks was doing this, but Zoo hasn't really been great in a while. Except for, like, you know, like one hot minute in one of the post-nerf metas. But, you know, because we haven't really had a Shaman deck or a Zoo deck that was board-centric like this since, like, the early Evolve Shamans, you know, totem placement is, and minion placement is actually pretty critical. And so this is the way you think about it. So the way that you get the most value out of your totems is when you're trading them off, you want to get as many minions as possible, either getting a buff to trade in and then allow, and then letting another minion slide over and get another buff, or getting your minions close enough to something that has Wind Fury or whatever that you get extra value out of it. I was pretty bad at this, actually, and Schwa was nice enough to point out in my stream Sunday night, like, a couple times that I misplaced minions, and it's difficult. And I appreciate him doing it, by the way. I'm not ragging on him. But generally, the general rule with Direwolf Alpha and with Flame Tongue Totem is that you want your most powerful minions on the left side of the board. And the reason is that when you're hero powering, your totems will always appear on the rightmost side of the board. Anything that you summon will appear either next to the minion, either to the right of the minion, or if it's just getting summoned out of thin air, it gets summoned all the way on the right of the board. So, typically, you want your Flame Tongue Totem to the right of any minions that are not totems. And then you want your totems to be able to kind of do a conga line, is the way that I've heard it described, where you trade one off, and the next one slides over, and that gets the buff, and that trades off, and the next one slides over, and so on and so forth. The one exception would be the Primal Fin Totem. Generally, you want to position your Flame Tongue and your Dire Wolf to the right of the Primal Fin Totem. Because the 1/1s that the Primal Fin Totem will generate will always come out to the right of the Primal Fin Totem. So you want to have the buff there so that, again, when they're sliding over, it's going to be, if you have a chain of 1/1s, that you're going to have them slide over, and then the next one will get buffed, because you want to be attacking with the 1/1s. You don't want to be attacking with the 0/3 that's generating. So, positioning gets a lot more complicated, but I think that's one thing that is going to make this deck tricky if you haven't played something like this before, is that you have to think about not only when you're playing each minion, but where are you placing the minion. So, in general, big beefy minions that are good standalone on the right, and then you want to get your Primal Fins next to Primal Fins immediately to the left of the buff cards. And the other thing that you need to think about is that if you're charging, you can attack with a minion that's getting buffed and then insert the charger next to that after that minion's attacked and get extra damage out of it. This is how you squeak out enough damage with this deck. It's important to be paying attention to where your buff minions are positioned so that you can squeeze the most value out of it and get the most face damage out of it. And that will help you be successful with the deck. So pay attention to your positioning. If you do watch the VOD from my stream Sunday night, I believe I talk about it a little bit. I talk through where I'm thinking about placing them. But again, just think about where you want to place things so that when they die, something else is going to slide over. You want the vulnerable minions with low health to be clumped together and then slide over to be next to the Flame Tongue or the Dire Wolf, so that they buff the next one and you can kind of chain those buffs and get a lot of value out of it in one turn. So on this topic, I kind of want to talk about something a little bit more general, and that's about picking a deck for ladder. And I I've been doing this for a year. I've probably talked about this before, but I know it's been a while. So I kind of wanted to talk about a little bit about how you find a deck for ladder, and how you know if you should be switching or not, like those types of things. Because I curate a lot of lists from ladder, from Twitter in particular. I follow a lot of, I don't follow, but I have a private list of a lot of Hearthstone pros, and I will keep up on what they're posting and also on what, like, Ahirun and HS Pro Decks are retweeting, just to see what people are coming up with. And I think that what's really important is knowing what is going to work for you and what is not. So even as I'm sitting here, talking about even Shaman and talking about how to play it, that may not be the right deck for you. It may not mesh with your playstyle. It may just not be something that you enjoy playing. You may not have all the cards for it. It may not fit your local meta. Like, I got a Twitter mention the day after I posted my list Sunday night, and he was saying that he's running up against a lot of big spell mages and the deck isn't doing anything for him, and he's right. Like, it's not going to. Like, it's important to know what makes a deck viable, because especially when you're looking at a deck list from Twitter, it's important to know the context of the person who's posting it. So the first thing that's important is, did this person just hit legend? Is this person, let me rephrase that. Is this person at around the same place at ladder that I am, or I'm trying to get to? So is this somebody who just hit legend with this deck? Or is this somebody who's playing a top 50 legend? That's a big difference, because the metas at, like, say, four to legend and top legend are, they're not dissimilar, but there also are a lot of differences that you sometimes tend to see, because the pros will gravitate towards different decks that sometimes have a bit of a higher skill cap, but have more reward when played well. Whereas the people who are playing at like five to legend may not go for those decks as much, and it may take them a little while to get the message that the decks that they're playing aren't as good as the ones that the pros are playing at high legend. But all of that dictates your meta. So if somebody is at high legend with a deck, that does not necessarily mean that deck will work for you. A, because the things that they're seeing are different, and they are very much teching their list towards the very specific decks that they're seeing. This happens less as the meta is more diverse, but I would imagine as the meta tightens up, we're going to see different card choices, and those card choices are going to be very much dictated by the decks that they're seeing up at top legend. Also, it's important to understand, like, there are certain players who have playstyles, and they will build decks that work for them that may not work for you and me. So Fibonacci is a perfect example. Fibonacci is arguably the best warrior player, and specifically control warrior player in the world. He has more wins with warrior than most of us have with all classes combined. So when he posts a warrior list, he's using all of his experience and all of his games played in warrior to build a deck that will be intuitive for him to play, but may not work as well for you. This goes for same for someone like Zettelot, for Priest. Like, I will look at Zettelot's lists, and I'm a Priest main by heart, but I often will not be able to play his lists optimally. Sometimes KC's rogue decks will, you know, be the same thing, or Nick Chipper's Hunter decks, for that matter. Like, there are some players who will play classes, no matter if the meta is good or bad or indifferent, and they'll take something a legend that you or I would struggle with. It's also important knowing that if a player is playing a playstyle of a deck, and does that playstyle match your playstyle? So this came up a lot recently, where I saw players like Casey, who's predominantly a Miracle Rogue player, and Meaty, who seems to be mostly an aggro player, posting lists of Quest Warrior and Mind Blast Priest, respectively. So Casey's Warrior was much more tempo-based than a lot of the other consensus Quest Warrior decks back when Quest Warrior was good. And Meaty's Mind Blast Priest a few weeks ago had two copies of Mind Blast, two copies of Holy Fire, and two copies of Life Drinker, because the burn is easier in Priest, because the burn only goes face, was what he said. I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said in the tweet. So you need to know, if you're predominantly a control player like I am, I'm going to pick up Meanie's list. I'm not going to do well with it, because I'm used to playing a control game, and I've got all these burn cards that I am not expected to be using, right? And I would use those to remove, and those really ought to go face. So it's important from that perspective to know what the player is that you're using. But that also doesn't necessarily mean that you should go to HS Replay and pick whatever the top deck is, because first of all, it's very likely to be targeted. And second of all, it may not be the best for you. I very often struggle, because the best decks on top are often at, like, aggro paladin decks, especially in wild. Well, it was in wild before the changes, and that didn't mesh with my playstyle. So I would struggle with it. And the other thing is that when you're picking the highest number of games played deck, that everyone's going to be targeting that, which is one of the benefits of playing Even Shaman this month. And I talked about that with Recruit Hunter before it got popular enough that people were targeting it, which is that you get a benefit from people mulliganing wrong. If you can pick a deck that's a little bit off meta, that's not like way out there, but also is different enough that people are going to mulligan for whatever the other archetype is, that gives you an advantage, a small percentage advantage in every game. And that's why I generally will try not to pick the best deck, but I'll try to find one of the counters for that. And if it happens to be in the same class as something that's, like, overwhelmingly popular, then, you know, all the better. So it's also just kind of worth knowing what's out there, just so you're aware of what decks are being played. I would caution, if you're using something like HS Replay or Vicious Syndicate, that you do make sure that you're paying for the premium. Because, first of all, support them, because that's a nice thing to do. But also because you really need the filters, especially when you're playing at higher ranks, to filter it to your ranks. Because the meta reports that they're giving you, especially the live ones, are very, very differently between ladder tiers. And they also very, very radically, from even just from day to day, like the difference between last one day and last 3 days in a meta in HS Replay is sometimes huge. And you need to be able to account for that. So if you're looking at, like, the base HS Replay, which is showing, like, ranks 25 to Legend for the last 30 days, you're going to get a lot of outdated data, and you're going to get a lot of mismatched data, because you're not necessarily going to be able to prepare for what you're looking for. So do make sure that you're paying for the premium so you can get the filters for those. But also just kind of, you know, take stock of what's there and see if there's anything that, you know, they all give you matchup percentages and whatnot. Like, try to find something that's good against generally what you're seeing. And try to understand, I would recommend in general, this is my last, you know, net decking tip for you. Try to play the deck that is in front of you, that the person played before you start changing it. And very often when I will see discussions around deck lists, I'll see, okay, well, this deck looks good, but I don't like this card and that card, and then changes for this, and then changes for that. If you are not generally a deck builder, you know, first, that can be kind of dangerous, because you're changing cards without really understanding why the cards are in there. Like, I can guarantee you, more often than not, if a pro is not trolling, or if a deck is very popular and doing well, that every card is in there for a reason, and the people who do better with that deck are going to be, obviously, the person who built it, but also the people who understand why the cards are in the deck, so that they can take advantage of them. And you don't get that without playing it. So sometimes you can, like, if you're looking at this even shaman list, for example, you might cut the Vicious Scale High, because, like, why do I care about a 1-3 rush with lifesteal? But the point is that it's in there because of the Corpse Taker synergy, and you do lose a little bit by taking that out. That doesn't mean it's a wrong thing to do. It means that you need to understand what the deck is doing before you start messing with it, and that comes with experience and kind of standing on the shoulders of people who came before you. So I would take advantage of that, of, you know, the list that people are posting, and try to work with them and understand why they do what they do. And then once you've played a few games with them, then tinker with them. Say, okay, well, this was built for a meta that I'm not seeing, so I'm going to change it to do this instead, because I'm seeing more of this, and that would be more helpful. But I think just be smart about the decks you're playing. And in general, if you are struggling with a deck that generally has a high win rate, especially on something like HS Replay, you probably want to go find VODs of the deck. And there's a site that I don't remember the name of right now, but I will find before I record the next segment and put a link to that in the show notes that I know Ridiculous Hat's been very fond of, that will actually give you links to replays of high legend players playing specific decks and specific lists that will give you an idea of how you can play the decks more optimally. Because sometimes when a deck is not working for you, sometimes it really is bad because it just happened to work for that pro. But sometimes it's just that you don't understand how to play it optimally, and taking that time to learn it will sometimes make that difference between, you know, getting above 50% or getting below or dropping below 50%. All right, so let's wrap it up here. I did ask Ridiculous Hat what the site was for getting the replays, and he was kind enough to tell me that it was metalegend.com that I was thinking of. So that is a place that you can go if you want to see decks played at a high level, and you can probably learn something. I'm actually going to spend some time with that tonight, because I've not spent a lot of time with it, but he said that it's helped him a lot, and I have a lot to learn still. So check that out. But you can also find all of the show notes for this episode, including that one, at offcurve.com. And you can, on Twitter, you can follow the show's account if you just want announcements of when new episodes and when other content related that I put up on site goes live. You can find that at offcurve. That is also a place where you can send in questions to the show, and there may be a good reason for you to send in questions to the show next week, hint, hint. So you may want to follow that account now. You can also follow me on Twitter. I'm at WikiGood, where you can see me posting about all manner of things, including reactions to E3 games and stupid screenshots from games that I've played and stuff like that. You know, it's kind of, you know, whatever, my normal Twitter nonsense. You can follow me on, you can follow my stream on Twitch. I'm WickedGoodFM. I normally stream Sunday nights. I may try to work in a second night on weeks that I'm not casting UHL, of which this is one, so I may try to do that. I won't hit Legend on every stream, but I did on the last one, so it could happen again. And, I do have a YouTube channel that I'll link in the show notes as well, that I pulled out one of the games and posted it there, if YouTube's more your thing. And please do leave a review on iTunes. It helps folks find the show, and, you know, kind of just helps, you know, helps visibility, and it's also, you know, it's fuel to know that, you know, folks are listening and appreciating the content that I'm putting out. And you know, that goes not just for me, but for any podcast that you spend a lot of time listening to. If you can take, 2 minutes to write up a quick review, it helps a lot. And I did get another review this week from Kremdian on Tuesday, who says, "Great discussions. I love listening to this podcast. I've been listening to it for about a year now, and Wicked Good always has great insight on the state of the game, and I love hearing his opinions." So thank you so much. I appreciate it, and I appreciate all of you who are, you know, taking the time to, you know, even just to write in and say that you appreciate the show. It means a lot. I'm not fishing for compliments, but, you know, when someone does say that, it does mean a lot, even if I'm not really great at knowing how to respond to it. It does mean a lot to hear that. And, you know, it means a lot that you all are taking the time out of your day to spend your commute with me while I'm on my commute. So I appreciate that. I appreciate all of you. So thank you, as always, for listening. We'll be back next week with hopefully some super special content. But I don't like counting my chickens before they're hatched, but I am very hopeful that we will have something very special for you next week. And if not, then we'll have a normal episode, and we'll have something very special the following week or the week after that. But every week is special that I get to spend with you all. And thank you for spending time with me. I know you have a lot of choices of where you can spend your Hearthstone podcast listening time. And I really do appreciate you spending it with me. So until next time we get together, good luck on the ladder. Good luck in Arena, if that's what you're doing. And good luck at everything. And be good to each other.